What's up, guys? It's Casey, and I'm not sure if you know this because we don't do a great job of marketing it, but here I am to let you know that we have some badass tutors on our website. And if you are looking for that one-on-one special quality time to ask all your dying questions, set up a study plan, help you figure out where to start, help you break down a mock exam, maybe you didn't pass and it just wasn't your time, which is okay. They will help you get back on the horse and get you to pass your test once and for all. So head over to www.studynotesaba.com. Under resources, you're going to find tutoring, and you can book with any of our really amazing tutors. They've all gone through the collective, so they know their shit. Love you. Mean it. Mwah. Study Notes ABA.
ABA in a little X-rated way. It's behavior, bitches.
Hey, guys. It's Liat.
And Casey.
And we are here with episode 161. What's so funny today, Casey? Give us a rhyme.
When you're going through a lot of shit, it's super not fun.
Oh, okay. 161. What are you going through, Case?
Oh, just a lot. You know, life. Issues, life. Marriage, life, everything. Life is life, baby. Let me tell you. Woo! Yeah.
Is that the amount of update we're going to give today? Yeah.
Yeah, that's about as much as I'm willing to share. I will say that...
Don't worry, guys. It will become diarrhea. It will come diarrheaing out sometime soon.
But I will say that being here right now is giving me life. 161. Life does not rhyme with one, so never mind. But I will say that I, of course, the easy way out for negative reinforcement is to cancel things when you feel like you're in a tough place. And I said to Liat this morning, I said, I am fucking in the tub. I am crying. I am in a really low, like broken space. But I know that the podcast and our guest and coming like to doing things that are in my routine is going to make me actually feel better. And I already feel like, okay, because like, yes, could I choose to sit in the tub and cry for the rest of the day? Of course. Or could I choose to show up and have an amazing guest and do a podcast so that you guys all can listen and learn from this amazing person? And so if you're going through shit and you're feeling like, wow, like I don't want to get out of the bed. I want to pull those covers up. You got to get up. Keep moving. I'm telling you, because when you move through it, that's how you get through it.
I'm so proud of you. Honestly, you know, my parents always were, I always talk about my mom, like, quit, just quit. Like, this class is too hard. Linky, just quit. You know, like, I don't want to go. Just cancel the podcast. Like, I always laugh. I'm like, Mom, I don't know how I became anything because you just told me to quit everything. So this morning, I'm like, Casey, you just want to cancel? You want to, like, she's like, no, I'm good. I'm like, all right. I just, like.
I said, I'm going to rally. I go, no, I'm not canceling. I go, life is fucking hard. And I, like, when those moments come when you're, like, on the verge of quitting is when you need to push through. Because then on the other side of that comes absolute like beautifulness. And if anything I've learned throughout everything I've been through the last 8 months is like, Liat always tells me, you got to go through it to get through it. And
dude, when I hear, like, that she listens, it's like, wow.
I listen to you. Talk to her.
I feel like I talk to her well, but she sometimes repeats it back. It's so interesting.
All right, let's do a little review of the day and then let's get into
it. Butter and jelly. Go.
Butter and jelly. Okay. So, a review of the day. We had a lot of new reviews, which is amazing. And thank you. And please go leave them on Apple Podcast. I will do the plug that we love them. They make us keep going. Reinforcement is, you know, you're going to keep going if you get reinforced. Today was from Choo-choo-91. Applying concepts is hard. Love the show, got my hours, got my degree, still trying to pass the exam, hashtag hardest of my life. I'm still having a hard time applying concepts to everyday life, but the podcast has been so helpful. So thank you both and your guests for helping me and your viewers apply ABA concepts to everyday life. And that is the goal of this podcast. And I love being able to interview people in and out the field who can bring in those things And today's guest is super special. I actually went through the Behavior Bitches podcast email, which I told him I never go through. I literally try to, but it's like a whole nother realm of emails. And I was like, all right, I see that. I see you. All right. So we met. I met his, what is she? Tell me.
Well, she's sort of my social media manager.
Yep.
Because I know nothing about the whole social media deal and promotion and all of that kind of stuff. So
Jaquila Hawks. And so Jaquila was like, I'm meeting with her and I'm, you know, asking about you. And she was like, oh, my husband took your exam prep, Ricky the RBT. And I was like, full circle, 100%. That's amazing. I love Ricky. Like, he's great. And so, like, the connection was there right away. But I want to introduce our guest first. I know he's already here.
On today's episode, behavioral principles covered are histories of reinforcement, cultural awareness, reinforcement, punishment, and shaping.
Let's talk about Dr. Terrence Bryant. Okay. And we're going to refer to him as Terrence once we get actually into it. But right now, I'm going to give you the real deal intro. You guys know how I love to do that. So Dr. Terrence Bryant has over 20 years of practical experience in providing ABA services to a variety of populations. These individuals include those with severe emotional behavioral disturbances, autism disorders, intellectual disabilities, mental illnesses, and a host of other issues requiring treatment. He has served these populations in different facilities, home settings, group home, foster care, schools, independent living, literally everything. He has a wealth of experience in behavioral assessment and behavioral treatment plan development. And he's also been a professor for over 10 years, and he is on a mission to further his professional efforts by partnering with community and nonprofit organizations with the mission of serving those who face everyday challenges posed by emotional behavioral problems. Who doesn't have those? I know I do. Okay. Intellectual disabilities and mental disorders. And he is a wealth of knowledge. So welcome to the show, Dr. Terrence Bryant.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Just so happy to be here, and I'm glad you guys are happy to be on.
Yeah, of course. When I met you, it was like, yep, we were like, we emailed after and it was like, good vibes.
That's awesome. I got the same one to send too. I just felt very good about, you know, the atmosphere and what you conveyed to me in terms of, and I listened to a couple of your episodes. I wasn't a frequenter of, in terms of, I really just heard about you more recently, but I really enjoyed the variety of content and the variety, the different divergent guests you have on and their perspectives. So it was really awesome. Congratulations on everything you guys have been able to achieve so far.
Thank you. It's so sweet.
It's huge because even now I sit back and I'm like, wow, when we started this and I told you this, I was like, we were so scared to branch out of the field and be like, oh, Liat has like the balls of us. I am more like people pleaser. And she's like, let's start a podcast called Behavior Bitches. And I'm like, I'm going to lose my license. I'm like, thank you, ma'am. And now, like, to be able to sit back and have these conversations, especially with someone who has like over 20 years of experience in the field, and especially in the state our field is in, right? Like,
yes.
That's what we talked a lot about in our pre-interview, is like, how do we help disseminate the science in a better way? And I know that you're on a mission to do that too.
Absolutely. But particularly when it comes to diverse populations, because we encounter so many families or individuals that are so culturally diverse. And I think I feel has a ways to go. And I think some efforts are being made to kind of bridge the gap between, you know, the science that we know is very effective in our field and is evidence-based and it's such a strong, you know, science to fit the cultural fabric of individuals from ethnically culturally diverse populations. So I think that's where we're needing to. In my experiences, I've encountered those kinds of issues with not being able to connect with families in an effective way that are different from myself. You know, that have different cultural experiences and come from different places. And I've supervised quite a few individuals in the field who've encountered that when I do clinical supervision, they're saying, I can't be effective for some reason. I know what I'm trying to convey is the correct thing, but the family's not receiving it. And a lot of times it's just certain barriers that exist that we haven't really considered from a cultural kind of standpoint. Our science, our field has not really addressed that, I don't think, effectively over the years of culturally sensitive assessments and interventions that kind of are woven into the fabric of the individuals that we serve. So I've had more of a more recent trek in terms of trying to figure out how can we be more effective in those areas. So
can you, I know that Casey did the pre-interview for anyone listening. Sometimes we like switch off with pre-interviews. Yeah. Can you, and I was not there. So can you take me back to like your background, where you're from, where you grew up, and even absolutely. What got you into the field of ABA? Like, I mean, that's a lot of questions, but just take me back.
Yeah, I grew up in North Carolina. Okay. So I'm from North Carolina. I grew up as a younger sibling of an individual who had intellectual disabilities, autism. We later found out she had autism as well, but, you know, she had intellectual disabilities, pretty low functioning. So from day one, I was able to observe this person. She's about 3 years older than me, my sister. I was able to observe her and kind of had curiosities about what made her different. Why, as a younger brother who's 3 years younger, why was I so much far in advance of her in so many ways? It was just such a curious kind of thing for myself. I had a lot of questions. And a lot of those questions didn't even really get answered until I grew up, started my educational process, and started learning about some of these things. And you know, it's funny because when I started college, I was in a pre-med program. I was kind of just going a whole different direction.
And me too. I started pre-med too, my first college, and I'm like, oh, whoa, what am I into?
Yeah. And I mean, it was going well, but it was like, it wasn't filling me, or it wasn't resonating with me in any way. And I took a psychology course, I think it was psychology of learning and something like that with Dr. Jeannie Golden at East Carolina University. And I was just so intrigued by sitting in that class, and I started thinking about my sister. I was like, wow, this is like, I think this applies to some of the questions I had about when I was growing up. Wasn't clear about her, that I didn't understand about her. And I started just kind of, I changed my major, started one day, answer those questions more directly, get more info, get more understanding and knowledge. And I think that's where my trajectory in terms of going into the field of ABA started. I think it started early, but I had no idea what I wanted to do. And then when I got some more information and started learning a little bit more, it just kind of drew me in and just kind of took me further and further. And then I just started wanting to work in a field where I could help folks like my sister. Of course, I grew up back in the 70s. We were, you know, as a young child. And there were no available services back then like ABA. I mean, I'm sure, I think Lovas was actually at UCLA was actually just starting out with his clinic and all of that around that time. And so nobody on my side of the country or anywhere else really knew anything about the science of ABA, how it can be used to help individuals. So we were just operating with what we understood or what we understood as a family and in our background and how we respond to situations and things like that. Without the benefit of having a practical science that we can utilize to try to effect change and or help in my sister's development. So I'm not sure, Leanne, if I answered all your questions about my background or where I'm from. I said where I'm from. And
that's interesting. You know, I mean, it's always interesting to hear, like, you know, story. Where someone started. Also, like, it does help understand a little bit of an MO into, like, I have a brother also with an intellectual disability. And so it definitely, like, for you see a lot of siblings and it like changes the trajectory, yes. You know, about what you do. So
it almost felt natural to work in this field in a way, very natural, like because I was working in that field as a child in a sense, just trying to help help out with my sister, try to respond to things that, you know, to make things better for her or help her with correcting behavior and things like that. but I just didn't know what the heck I was doing. I didn't know.
Manipulating the environment to make sure.
Which I know from the Cooper book applied to what I was trying to do or anything like that, obviously.
Totally. I mean, and it's crazy what it does for you. Cause I know, like, even just like having a sibling myself, I also have a 2-year-old son and I have a 27-year-old brother, like I said, with an intellectual disability. And like the maturity level, like my 2-year-old son, like my brother, my 27-year-old brother will like take toys away from him. You know, like he's trying to be responsible. So he doesn't want Kobe, my son, to touch anything. Like, don't touch that, hot this, that. And I'm always like, I'm so happy that my son is going to have an uncle like this, because it's going to change who he is as a person, right? Like this understanding, because, you know, someone who's not exposed to this as a kid, like you're not aware that, like, you know, because I don't really have those conversations with Kobe yet because he's so young. But like my nieces who live down the street also, who are 6, they know, like, oh yeah, Uncle Gully's different, you know, because he's always yelling at them. And they're like, then when he's nice to them, they're so happy when he lets them like watch TV or whatever. But it really is. It's
special.
It's special. It's special for, you know, like you're learning young.
Absolutely. I totally agree with that. Myself as a younger sibling, it taught me selflessness early on. Quite naturally, we have a selfish impulse, you know, if this was sort of left to develop the way we typically would. But from my earliest memories was always putting my sister first, because we had to focus so much attention on her needs, you know, even though I was younger. And it just taught me to, which I carry that around in my development throughout my life. And to this point, my wife even tells me, hey, well, you know, you need to go buy something for yourself. You're always doing something for us or somebody else or something. You're neglecting yourself. I tell her, I don't know how any other way to be. It's my impulse to think about somebody before me. I think that with Kobe is your son.
Yeah.
I think that certainly he'll take some valuable insights and some of his development will be shaped by, in a great way, by having access to your brother and his perspective in terms of growing up with his uncle and looking at him. And so
all he wants to do is play with his uncle's fire trucks.
That
my brother doesn't even like or play with. He just refuses to let Kobe play with. And you know. I learned from a young age, like when you have someone in your family, let's say with intellectual ability, I don't know if it was similar to you, can't speak for you, but like, it's like often like that logic in conversations is gone. It's like, girl, come on, share it with Kobe. Like, you don't even like those. You haven't played with them for years. And he's like, I love it. And it's like, girl, come on. He'd be so happy. You know, he loves fire trucks. He's like, I have it long time. Little baby mama's tummy. I've had it since I was a baby in mama's tummy, which, like, also, it's like, girl, come on. Kobe shares all his stuff with you when you come to our house. And it's like, you know, like, it's funny. Like, I know he does not respond to this logic of this stuff, but like, you still are like patient and you have this conversation over and over, also, and it goes nowhere.
And I want to say this too about like being like kind of tying it back to like going into different households and understanding like what you're talking about is like, when I come into your household, Leah, and I see your family's dynamic with Gal, like, it is, A, you guys are Jewish, and you're, like, you celebrate Shabbat, you keep kosher. Uh-huh. Like, so if I was a therapist coming in, and I'm not any of that, I'd be like, what do you mean there's no TV for these 24 hours? What do you mean that I can't come and do therapy on Friday at 4? What do you mean I have to, like, wash my hands after we say a prayer that I don't even know what the prayer is? Like, but Gal, as like him, he is so embedded in these different rituals that are religion. And like, as a therapist coming in, you have to be open-minded and understand and ask these questions and be like, and then I see, like, you know, your mom and your dad with him and how they interact versus you and your sister, how you guys are like, you know, typically developing, and they have Gal, but it's like a family dynamic that is, you have to include everyone in it. Like, I want to know how Leah is with Gal. I want to know how your sister is with Gal. I want to know how the nieces are with Gal. I want to know what is his MO for being able to interact and have these like learning opportunities. And I need to know about your religion. I need to know what is going on, because if not, I am useless.
Absolutely. So I think that's perfect. Yeah. I mean, I think the two things, and I'm so glad you said that. I think the two things as clinicians, we need to practice, and it is something that I don't think happens enough. This is very simple. We need to know thyself.
Yeah.
By that, I mean, be able to reflect on your own potential biases, implicit biases you might have when you come into a situation with individuals who may have different cultural experiences than yourself. But check your biases at the door and understand that you do. We all have them. I mean, somebody said, I don't have any biases. Of course you do. I mean, you have
bullshit.
You have your own cultural experiences and your own background and your own, the way you were raised and the way you were taught. That's going to be different from a lot of people we serve. And then knowing your client, knowing your family. So know thyself and know your client. Know your client because sometimes we want to go in and get our assessments done and do all of our different measurements and try to see, you know, what things we need to work on in treatment and kind of do our ABA thing. But I think that there are some pre-assessment things that need to be done in terms of just understanding the family's values, understanding what's important to them. What are some of the goals for your child, if we're working with one of the children? What are some of your beliefs and values in terms of your parenting style? What do you feel is important that you must maintain in terms of your redirecting behavior or your parenting interventions that you currently use? And we need to try to understand them. And then after we get to know them a little bit, then we come back and try to do an assessment with consideration of those values that they have, not just an assessment, you know, that's only related to our tools and the things we're using.
Like a typical VB map or Vineland, right? Or whatever.
Can we do culturally sensitive assessments, you know, and integrate their values into the process? And then we have interventions that are also culturally sensitive. So that they have a feeling that, okay, these people really get us a little bit. They're not who we are, you know, they come from a different background, but they're trying to learn about what's important to us and our values and the things that we hold dear in terms of our culture. So I think it builds trust in the relationship by building that kind of rapport. And then I think it'll make you more effective as a practitioner. And you might discover some things that can contribute to bigger understanding in the field. Like now we could probably do some research on, hey, you know, I've noticed I've worked with a couple of Jewish American families. I worked with an Egyptian family one time. I've worked with an Egyptian family. That was probably the only client I've ever had that was like more of Egyptian. Mm-hmm. And it was just something as simple as she was offering me something to eat. And it was like, oh, you know, I was in that mindset of we never supposed to accept gifts in any circumstance. So I'm operating in my whole
nothing.
whole ethical thing, the ABA ethic thing, you know. And and then I wondered why all of a sudden why she was canceling appointments or didn't really want to continue with services, things like that. And when I figured it out, it all boiled down to they were offended because I turned down the offering. I didn't take it. So not understanding that at the outset, you know, me not considering that was a big thing. I mean, it sounds like something small, but it can be very big depending on
what you're working. Be very big. And also, I think one of the quotes I have from our pre-interview was like, we need to be human first. Absolutely. And not robots. And absolutely, the stigma of the field is that we come in as behavior analysts and it's like, I'm going to change the world and I know everything. But like at the end of the day, if you come with that approach, like we do know the science is amazing, right? Like you've been in it for 25 years. You know that this shit works. Are we good at applying it to ourselves? Not really. Are we good at putting it on other people? We try, but we also come off as assholes sometimes. So we need to be able to come in and just have that time, that pre-assessment where it's not about data. It's not about this. It's about understanding what they're going through. And once you kind of cross that and like have even one little bit of like today when I started this thing with you, I'm like, oh, I've had a real fucking rough night, like tired, right? Marriage shit's going on. Like then it's like opens up to be like, I'm vulnerable and what I can talk to you. And you can still maintain your ethical boundaries, but also be human.
No doubt, absolutely. And we've been accused of being robotic and deterministic yep. and, mm-hmm. yes, and a lot of other things I won't say on air. But definitely yeah. that's something that we have to deal with and get over it as a field too. Because I've heard I've gone into situations where new clients at new families, and they're like, oh, you're one of those behavior analyst people, and said mm-hmm. a few objectives or things or things that yeah. you know that were I don't know how they. Maybe it's their past experiences. Maybe it's what they've heard from other people. But our name is definitely out there in some positive and not so positive ways. So I think just understanding people and where they are and who they are and you know, and not being arrogant. We can yes. be pretty arrogant folks, too.
Like, be humble.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the humility will go a long way.
I say that because I went into my first, school, and I'm like, new BCBA, here I go. And feeling myself like, yeah. The teacher hated. She was like, and it wasn't, I didn't even open my mouth yet. She was like, oh, you're the BCBA? Right. And I'm like, and my heart was like broken. I'm like, what do you mean? And she's like, you don't listen to us. You don't know anything. Like, I'm like, okay. And so I like talked. Danielle is one of our co-teachers and she's in the school district all the time. And I always ask her, I'm like, how do you relate to teachers when you come in? And she's like, I literally bring them donuts. I hang out with them. I will spend a full week just, I don't even say one thing about anything. I will go in and just hang out and learn and listen and let them tell me everything. I don't say a word for like a week. And I'm like, and then she gets the buy-in. And then she's like, I can help. I see this. Let's work together. And then still she'll be like, oh, yeah, today I brought, you know, she learns what their favorite things are. They're reinforcers. And she's like, oh, so-and-so like loves sour stuff. And I'm going to bring her sour Skittles today. And we're going to like, and that's how it's just so normal. You would do that normally with a friend, right?
Absolutely. Relationship building.
Yeah.
Dale Carnegie, How to Win Friends and Influence People.
Yep.
It's a great read even to this day. I mean, it's a lot of things in there that can teach people how to get people to do what you want them to do and how to get them to like you.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Talk about baiting the hook with what the fish eats.
Yeah, right. Yeah, absolutely.
So, all right. So what now, like, okay, so you've been in the field for 25 years. What is your, like, mission now and what do you want the field to know about, like, dissemination, cultural humility, all of that?
Oh, it's just really just to, as I was talking about before, well, I want to have a way of just getting information out there to people who are coming into the field. I would like for, you know, us to consider more of what we're talking about, some of the cultural understanding of different folks. I think we just need to have that woven into our academics and our research and our supervision of other folks and to practice. So if I can be an agent in some way, shape, or form, even if it's just doing some research and, you know, mm-hmm. can we put together some assessment tools or some things like that that consider those things and have them looked at and, you know, I guess tested to see, you know, the validity and all of that good stuff, that research, you know, of the different tools, you know, and how well they are, you know, how effective they can be. I think things like that, just introducing some of that, more of that into our field. We have a great, strong science, you know, but the science is not necessarily built on a variety of different folks that we serve. You know, so how can my mission would be to be involved in that process. I know that there's special interest groups with ABAI, I think it's a cultural.
Yeah. Well, group. I was telling you when we had our free interview, I'm like, you need to be like a mentor for people coming into the field who need to hear this and learn how to become culturally aware and understand different races, different religions, different socioeconomic, different like gender preferences, like all that stuff. And you have those years of experience in the science to be able to now mentor those coming into the field.
Well, what I want to ask you is this. So looking at it, right? Like we talk about like that's something we should be doing. This is great to do. I could talk about what it's like working with a Jewish family or like a Orthodox Jewish family because I could speak to that, right? I can't speak to what it's like, you know, have I had some experience? Yeah, but I can't speak like you could speak about being a African-American man or an African-American family in America or any of these different things. So I want to know, like, what is your take and what can we do to become, like, I know, are there assessments like this out there? And I'm just like, you know, I'm not in the clinical space, so I'm not practicing. What can we do? I mean, I imagine one of the good things is having conversations with one another. But what are your takeaways or things that we can do?
Okay, well, I think a couple of things. Now, you asked, are there any current assessments out there that target those things? From what I've seen in my looking at the research and reviewing, there are assessments out there that are culturally sensitive. Most of them are in other fields, though. There's some in the cognitive behavioral kind of psychology field and other areas in the mental health. Not so much in ABA necessarily. Just a few. I can't recall them off the top of my head. I think the old Connors behavior rating scale kind of asks, and the AAPI, adult adolescent parenting inventory, those two scales kind of, they're not necessarily culturally based, but they do take into account the parenting values and have questions on them geared toward what's important to you in your child rearing practices or and those types of things, or how do you see the behavior of your children from your own lens. But I think some of the ones that target kind of cultural variables, we could probably make amendments to them or make changes to them to fit ABA a little bit more in terms of the things we're looking for in our field, or develop something. I mean, it's hard to develop. Usually we borrow things. We don't develop anything, reinvent anything. We just kind of recycle and kind of edit it and change it to what fits what we do, which is great. So I think that in that way, we can have some things, you know, that fit more what we're trying to accomplish in that regard. As far as Jewish culture, like myself being from a different culture, and how do we make changes in that way in terms of, because, you know, we can only operate in our own wheelhouse to some degree. We have to understand other cultures better. How can we do that? I think if we could figure out how to recruit more culturally diverse practitioners, I think that's going to be a huge thing. And when we have more leaders in the field who are from culturally diverse backgrounds, who are contributing to the development of a lot of the different things we're trying to do in terms of assessment and practice, I think we kind of grow into that a little bit more. So I think that'll be a huge thing. We have a group, a Facebook group dedicated to Black men that I've just recently joined. It's BMBA, Black Men in Behavior Analysis. And we had a meeting last night, actually, and we were just talking about, because it's not a lot of us, so when we see each other, Black men who are ABA professionals, we're like, whoa, you know, that's fantastic. Yeah. But it's not nearly enough of us. So that's why we're so surprised. Like, oh, my God, you're an ABA. We're so we gravitate toward each other because so few of us. But if we can get recruit more practitioners, talk about ABA, get them trained, you know, get them to come, you know,
to love the field, to understand the science.
Absolutely. Because the one thing about ABA, I don't care where you're from or what cultural background, it applies to every human being walking this earth.
Yep. It's not autism. It's
right.
Not just autism.
So all the principles are talking about things that motivate behavior, why we do what we do, it applies to everyone. It's just that it's written from a standpoint of, well, let's face it, it's written by white men.
Old white men.
So that's what a lot of our material and prescriptions for how we do it and what these concepts mean are based on the thoughts and perspectives of that group. So the more we can have a diversity in the people who are come into the field, I think it helps us kind of go into those areas.
So we get it. You probably started listening to us back when you were studying for your exam, but our hope is that our material helped you pass the test, and now you are a badass BCBA in the field. So if you are, you know that you need these things called CEUs. Yes, you do. And now SNAVA has some of the best ever CEUs. They're interesting, they're going to help you learn and get you those things that you need to get every 2 years. So head over to ceu.studynotesaba.com and check out our collection of CEUs. Love you, mean it.
I think a lot of us get into these different fields, or like when I got into special education, for example, right? Like whatever we go into, if you're in, like, if you're someone who wants to be in a helping career, you're like, and you come out hungry and thirsty and like, I'm going to make changes. I'm going to do this. Right. So like before I was a behavior analyst, I got my first job as a special ed teacher. And like I got at the regular school district, but I was like, I'm going to work at this charter school in DC. I'm ready. I'm going to, you know, it was like low income, these kids coming from nothing. It was like, and like the school was amazing what they were doing for these kids. Okay. I come in and I'm like, I'm the special ed teacher there. I remember a little boy, like the cutest little like African-American boy. And I was like he was like my kid that I got to work with. Right.
Right.
And, you know, there was different behavioral things, but like I saw this kid, I was like, some of them were just like, you know, I mean, he definitely like was on the spectrum. So I'm like working on different things. And I remember like calling his parent, or no, but I remember just like speaking to his grandmother, because I think that's who was caring for him. And I was like, you know, like we're working with whatever his name. I don't actually, it was so many years ago, I don't actually remember his name, but either way, I couldn't say it. I'm HIPAA, I know, right? And I remember like her being like, yeah, okay, and like hanging up on me. And like I went to like, and I was like, oh. And it was like, and then I went and actually I spoke to the principal, who was a Black man. And like he just like he ran this school like so amazingly. And I was like, you know, like I tried speaking to, you know, this kid's grandmother, and like she hung up, and like he really explained this to me. He was like, you have to realize like what like this grandmother, like what she has come to in America. Okay. Like she's come here. She's not like, yes, I understand that you're here trying to help her son or her grandson, right? But here you are, you're this young, like white woman coming in to do this. You have got to like establish a relationship before you just come in and it comes across like you're just trying to fix this kid, right? And at the time I remember being like put off at first. I was like, what the hell, like I'm here, like I really want to help this kid, I want to do this, I'm calling because like I've been putting in all these efforts making these different things, and I was just like, wait, how am I getting responded to like this, like shut down when I'm here trying to help, right? And it was like a really big wake-up call for me, like And so the principal had actually called, and they were like super responsive. And I saw this, and he was like, and I was like, okay, but if you could call, he's like, yes. Like, he's like, there's more trust there. Like myself being a Black man, he's like, but we could build this. Right.
Right.
Like they just need to see, like, you have to also like, he wasn't talking about ABA, but he was like a learning history. Right. Mm-hmm. And it was like a really eye-opening lesson for me. In terms of like, and it changed the way that I was like, wow, like I'm coming in with like, here I am from my background. I wasn't even thinking about like the history, right? Like not to sound like naive or anything, but I just was, I came in hungry to help out of grad school. I had the energy, way more energy than I have now. Wish I had it now, my own kid. But, and that was like a perfect example for me of like, wow, like we do need to have this understanding. And
yes,
obviously, like what behaviors we're expecting of the individual as well. Like, you know, like I would, like as a religious Jewish family, we'd expect different things of my brother than, you know, someone else might. But at the same time, for the expectations of what you're expecting of the family and how they're going to respond and how you are going to ultimately pair with them.
Yep. Absolutely. That's a perfect example of what we're talking about, too. And just being culturally aware, but also being doing a self-evaluation to be able to look at what your understand based on your experiences, your own biases that we don't even like we're not walking around going, oh, you know, we have our own things we come in to, based on our own experiences and our own upbringings and our expectations of others sometimes will be based on that. And so you got the hang up. You're like, what? That's so disrespectful. I mean, I'm here to help. If you know about Black culture, there's cultural mistrust of professionals, whether it be medical, mental health.
We're acknowledging even like the mental illness side, like we've talked about.
Right, absolutely. There's a cultural mistrust that's ingrained in Black culture, and maybe some others too, but certainly in Black culture. My mother used to tell me because she grew up during the civil rights era as a child and young adult. She would tell me, hey, you know, you can't trust these white people. You know, you can't just open yourself up to them. You can't. She built a aura of when somebody's there, you change up your behavior, you close things down, and you don't let people in.
You.
And I had to go through years of experiences to undo some of that.
Of course.
Because, you know, when you exposure is important. So like when you get in there and you consider other people and you build that trust and relationship, but it takes time. It puts you in a position of, well, they're not necessarily all that way, or some of these people really care about me and, you know, what my perspectives are.
And it kind of
overcomes a lot of that. But those things are there. I mean, you know, I can understand exactly what you were talking about when you said, I'm going to call, we're going to get this thing together, I'm going to help her.
I mean,
child.
I was eager. I was hungry, but what made the difference was this principal taking the time and explaining exactly that to me. Yeah. He's like, you have to understand the mistrust that's been here. You have to understand like what's happened, like of these different things. Because at first I was like, what the hell? Like, I'm here trying to help. And I'm like, literally like getting shut. Like they're literally would hang up on me. And I'm like, this is so like, you know, but that's what like is so important that he actually took the time as opposed to being like, and explaining to me. Right.
Right.
Like, you know, and all of us, I just feel like, are so busy in our world and, like, the different things going on. And it's, like, those extra 5-10 minutes that we take to someone, like, whether it's another practitioner or, you know, we obviously understand the ins and outs of our, like, our own ethnicities, races, religions, right, whatever it is, more than, you know, or, like, you know. So oftentimes, like, even with Casey, like, even though we might both look like white women, we are so different. And, like, what I come from as, like, an Orthodox Jewish, like, that. And I'll, like, ask, like, and we have these conversations all the time. And I'm like, no, like, you don't get it. You can't, you literally can't say that here. Like, that is,
well,
like,
it's funny because, like, I grew up, my stepdad, Black man, raised me since I was, like, 10 years old. And, like, things, like, that are become conditioned. So, like, and I know it, like, when I tell Liat, she's like, what do you mean? I'm like, oh, like, the belt means, like, you don't fuck around. Like,
right.
And in like, weird shit like that, where she's like, what? Like, and I'm like, I have a neighbor down the hall who I'm just finally meeting here. He's an older Black man with a son, and he has a dog, and I have a dog, and we, like, play with our dogs. And I'm, like, so gentle with my dog, and, like, Mabel, don't. And he's like, he literally, with his dog, he pulls that belt out, and that dog is, like, and it's so funny. And I'm like, that is just like, that's culture, right? If I go in that house and I'm the therapist, I can't be like judging that or have a bias towards that or think it's abuse. Like that dog loves him so much, like listens on point. Like his son loves him so much. Like it is not for me to come in there. Like, thankfully I've had the experience with my stepdad knowing like that bell comes out, you know, fuck around. Okay.
Right.
But if a therapist came in, like maybe Liat or like someone that doesn't have that experience, I'd be like, I think I should call Child Protective Services. Like, this is bad.
Right.
And it's not.
It's so interesting. So interesting you say that. Cause
My dad took a belt out on us one time. I still remember that day. And it wasn't even for anything. It was literally non-contingent belt. Okay. It was like, by the way, my girl, that's what will happen if you ever don't. And I was like, that is not fair. Like, to come in, like, I literally am like sitting on my floor in my room doing something. Like non-contingent, like it didn't happen again.
I grew up with corporal punishment as a behavior management tool, obviously. So that was the primary one, and it was just kind of expected in the culture and you know that I grew up in. I used to do supervision with you know, a variety of people. I used to have, you know, people who come in and talk about the cases. And a couple of times, you know, some of the clinicians come in and say, well, you know, they spank. And when they had the belt, they were threatening the child with the belt. And I was wondering if I should call protective services. And it was, you know, a Black family who, you know, that's been their practice in terms of discipline and child rearing. And I said, let's not be quick to do that, because, you know, our goal is this. They're going to discipline, use the practices they use and that they grew up with, that's been a part of their culture. Our job is to say, look, you know, I'm not here to, you know, to question your authority in terms of how you raise your child and some of the practices you're using. You know, what I'm here to do is just to give, to offer some other things that can be put into the use.
Focus on that reinforcement part of it.
Right. And don't try to tell them, put the belt down or stop that. Because we obviously in ABA, we emphasize reinforcement and minimize the use of punishment.
Well, you just have to show what works. You got to be like, hey, you know what? This also works, by the way.
Right. But give them some more tools to put in the toolbox. Mm-hmm. Look, these parents want their children to be good and want them to behave, want them to grow up, be productive. That's the bottom line. It's just that that many of them grew up in a culture where they think that you have to use that belt or that corporal punishment. And that's the only tool you have to really straighten things out. You got to offer them other tools to put in the toolbox. And that's what we bring to the table. We respect their practices and we respect, you know, they're the way they see that they need to raise their children. And we just offer some additional things. What I found is that when I talked to the clinicians about that, and they just focused on offering some additional things, not criticizing them for the practices they were using, they started using some of those reinforcement procedures. And this is funny. One of the clinicians came back and said, because I told them, you know, have the parent track how many times they had to use. Focus on it. How many times you had to spank or use the belt? And they said, we collected the data. And she said, I've only did it once this week or twice this week. I've only done it once this month. This other stuff I'm doing is motivating them to follow directions or to comply or to, you know, engage in appropriate
behavior. Reduces that need for that punishment when they start learning those. Yeah.
Right. So I said, if the kid's behavior improves, most parents don't want it. Hit their kids.
No.
You know, that's just all they really know. That's all they had in their toolbox. So give them the additional tools and teach them how to use them, and don't criticize or openly criticize, because that's the quickest way out the door. You can't spank your child. See ya. You're not going to come in. You're not coming here and tell me how to raise my kids.
Do anything to your child. It's literally like.
Right.
And so I think that I've watched so many different TikToks on, what is it called? Positive parenting or something, like, about just like only that. Using this one way. And I'm like, listen, I learned because I got my ass beat, and that's how I learned not to do that again,
right?
And now when you're like, you can only do this, and if you do this, like, I'm like, oh my god, like, my mom and stepdad should be at this day, they'd be in jail. But guess what? Look at me. I was raised right. I am a good person. I learned my lessons. And but it's really hard. Like, you have to be open to coming into families' homes and understanding their different ways. And like you said, not criticizing.
Never tell them they're wrong about their practices.
Yeah.
Never tell them they're wrong. Just offer some other insights.
It's interesting you say this, because actually this morning I was sitting having breakfast. So Kobe's nanny, I'm a single mom, so I have a nanny. We were eating breakfast together this morning when we got Kobe off to school. And we were sitting there, and like, lately me and her are like, oh, it's me and you against Kobe, because like, his new thing lately, like, no, oh yeah, don't want to, I do it, you don't do it, I like, everything is a fight. So me and her are like, it's me and you against him. But like, I'm not so worried about it, because I've worked with other kids, whatever. I see it as like a developmental, like, obsessed to being independent now, right? She's from Mexico, like, newly here. She's like, Liad, I want to tell you, I think maybe you should see she tells me in Spanish, I should see a psychologist for him. And I'm like, I don't want her thinking that I'm like this not open mom to like hear it, right? I am. But to me, I'm also like, and she sees me a lot often, like, there's probably times when she's like, because I've seen her be like, he'll do these things, and it's like so for attention, because I look at her after, and like, you'd be like, no, you know? And like, try like hit or something, and she'll be like, Kobe, no. So I told her the other, and I guess she's seen me, and I told her, I'm like, listen, if he's ever acting up, like, you could like, feel free. Like, I want to make sure my kid's doing the right thing. But I've also told her, I'm like, look, like, you might notice that, like, I'm not saying anything. Like, when he hit me, like, across the face the other morning, like, when he didn't want to do something, I, like, completely ignored it and, like, did something else and whatever it is. And I, like, and I actually, I took the time to explain because I realized, like, she's living with us and she sees me just, like, essentially, to her, it looks like I'm just, like, allowing this kid to, like, hit me in the face, right, at these different things. But, like, I'm, like, redirecting him, whatever it is. And, like, today, she, like, and I was, like, I guess we actually finally had the time. So I'm sitting with her having breakfast. And I was telling her, you know, because she, like, had mentioned the psychologist. And I was, like, you know, like, yeah, like, I mean, I could definitely, like, think about it. But, you know, I've worked with kids for a long time. And I do know that, like, developmentally, like, you know, he's, like, 2.5 or, like, almost 3. He's obsessed with being independent now. And a lot of the times I see, like, you know, when I give him a different response to do, he'll do it. Like, he'll be, like, throwing it. I'm like, you could just say, like, hey, I want a piece of cake, you know, or whatever it is. Right. And, like, only, like, in that moment, because I'm usually, like, so fast-paced, like, trying to make things, get him out, do this before work. And I was, like, explaining that, like, to her, it just looked like I'm just, like, letting this, like, 2-year-old slap me, right? Or that I'm just, like, cool with it. Like, that I'm just, like, raising this asshole that could just, like, slap his mom. I only realized that, like, in hindsight, that she was, like, trying to be so helpful and tell me to say a psychologist. But, like, here I am, like, thinking I'm putting it on extinction and, like, redirecting, you know? And so, like, that was also a cultural thing, like, you know? And – but she actually saw something and she was like, whoa, it worked. Because, like, I've seen her be like, Kobe, no, I am right here. We do not hit, you know? Right. And I'm not mad at her for doing that. I'm like, whatever you got to do to keep my kid in line, like, I don't care. Right. But, like, when she saw that, like, actually I was able to, like, just, like, quickly redirect it, it was, like, this conversation we had, and I didn't realize that, like, she's probably been in my house being, like, this mom is such a little bitch. Like, lets her kid, like, right, punch her in the face and walk away.
Hey, hey, you know what? My mom would have thought the same thing about you.
Yeah. like,
you know?
Who is this? Like, what a little, like, weakling, like, her kid, like he, like, hits me, and I'm just, like, I, like, completely ignore it, and I'm, like, doing something out, and, like, she, I just, like, I did not even, like, take, because, like, you're just so busy, you're not taking yourself out of it, being, like, what am I looking like to someone else, like, I'm literally, like, getting hit by a 2-year-old, and just, like, going on, you know?
But,
like,
you know what you're doing, is that you know he wants attention, but so you say, like, no, Kobe, he's gonna be, like,
yeah, like, these away things are, like, whatever it is that we're doing is so normal to us. Like, to me, like, yes, I'm in this ABA space, whatever. And don't get me wrong, I'm not always, like, perfect like that. But, like, you know, like, but it's just, we're so, and even I'm saying, like, having, you know, Kobe's dad being Israeli, like, we are totally different. Like, he would scare the shit out of him being like, you do not, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's just, like, really, like, keeping that awareness is,
yeah,
it's interesting, and it's just funny because it happened this morning.
Yeah, yeah, that's good. That's a good topic. I mean, you know, that's another insight or another perspective, you know.
Yeah.
Because we were looking at it from a different direction just a minute ago. But even with, we're looking at it from not criticizing someone for spanking or punishment. And then, you know, now you're being criticized for.
I'm like such a wuss. I, like, in that moment, I, like, to me, I'm like, I'm doing it right. I'm ignoring. And then I was like, I am looking like such a wuss right here. Like, she's probably, like, you're raising an asshole who hits you. Like, that's what I realized. Like, and it was just like, whoa.
Well, I think you come at it from both ways. The ABA side, the cultural side, the, like, understanding both. And, you know, Terrence, I think that what your work needs to, like, you are so fucking smart and so well, like, versed in the field that mentoring new BCBAs and understanding, like, just this episode alone, I think will make so many people open their eyes and check their biases and understand that you have them, you can't lie, and how to just go about it.
Yes, absolutely. You got to be comfortable with understanding that you're not a bad person because you have biases. I mean, you know, there's different. I like that. I think it was a Princeton, that implicit association test. I don't know if you guys ever took it, but it measures your implicit bias in a various areas. It might be religious, it might be race, you know, culture, different things. And I used to have my students take it, you know, and
they would get upset, like, oh, I can't believe the results of that test, you know. I don't feel like I'm that type of person. And I was like, no, it's not. You shouldn't be defensive about it. It does uncover some things, because implicit biases are unconscious. It's not like you're actively thinking about being an asshole, right, so to speak.
No, I think people associate it as like, I'm not racist. Like, that is like the period that people are like, right. But like, these things are like so innate that it's like,
right. Yeah.
Like, well, you know,
there was a conference I went to, it was WEBA in Boston and Women Implied Behavior Analysis. And I think her name, Denisha Jingles, she came up and she was like, literally, she's a Black woman. She's like, you know what? I don't really feel safe in this space because all of you are white and different than me. She goes, but the biases, she put up a bunch of words. And she goes, I want you to write down your first thing you think of when you say nail salon, right?
Right.
Or whatever, like just a bunch of, and it's like, oh, Asian, Chinese. Okay. And she's like, okay, so we already, these are just things that you, it's not about like you're judging or you're racist or this. It's like in society, in your contingencies you've come into contact with your learning histories, these words are going to elicit or evoke something that comes to mind, and write it down immediately. And don't worry about anyone judging you or anything. She goes, because we're all going to have probably the same ones. And it was like, it was so eye-opening. And like, we all like came together and were able to have this conversation of like, you know, because people get scared and like, you want to like tiptoe around the topic. And it's like, oh, okay, like I have a Black friend or whatever it is. It's like, she's like, no, listen, like be you and let's talk. And it was so beautiful.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. And the biases come in, these things come in, it's race, it's gender, it's so many different areas, you know. You could tell, hey, go to Firestone and talk to Joe. Joe is the best mechanic in town. Well, who is Joe, who you think Joe is when you get ready to go out to take your car down there? Think it's a guy. Right. You know, he's got to be a guy. What's Joe? Oh, it's Joanne. She's a female and she knows what the hell she's doing with cars and knows everything about them. You know, but you're going to think it's a guy before you go down there, just because
you're already predisposed to knowing that because of your past history.
Right. Absolutely. So yeah. Absolutely. Wow.
I love this conversation. It's so eye opening and just like reinforcing, and happy to be able to have these open conversations that are not scary, that are not like, these are what the new clinicians coming in the field need to understand, that we can all sit down and talk together and learn from each other.
Absolutely. Yeah, no doubt about it.
Well, you've been an amazing guest. I just want to say I'm so happy we did this, and I cannot wait to share this.
Where can everyone find you?
Well, my IG is dr.terrence_Bryant. It's spelled dr.terrence_ Bryant. So you can find me on Instagram.
And
he has a website. I'll post all of it in the show notes. And
okay, yes, website as well. www.lifeskillsbehavioral.com.
I think that you're going to be such a big influence in the future clinicians that are coming out.
Yeah, I certainly intend to be. In any way that I can help advance the field and develop folks. I've been developing people for a long time, and these are just some things that really are important for people to know coming in, and, you know, considerations and even tools that they can utilize coming in to be better than we were when we came in. Obviously, that's the goal. We want everybody to be better than we were.
That's what I always say, too. Even though I'm only 6 years in, I always tell my students, I'm going to tell you the mistakes I made so you don't make them.
Absolutely.
All right. Thank you so much for coming on. You're amazing.
Thank you. Your show is amazing. I'm going to continue to look forward to looking at more podcasts and more episodes. But I love what I've seen so far. So you guys are doing a great job. And I appreciate you having me on as well.
It's been fun. Thank you so much. All right, guys, you know where to find us. You can find us on our website, behaviorbitches.com, on Instagram at Behavior Bitches Podcast, Facebook at Behavior Bitches Podcast. You could listen to us anywhere, and you better be listening to us anywhere. But if you do have an iPhone, you better go to the Apple Podcast app and go leave a 5-star review or no review at all. 5 stars or nothing. No, I mean, just don't leave them. Anyways, that's all we have for you today. As always, love ya.
Mean it.
This show was produced by Pretty Easy Podcasts and made possible by listeners like you. If you ever thought of doing your own podcast, please visit prettyeasypodcast.com.